So what's up, guys? This is Via with Via Talk, Conversation Without Limits. I'm really excited to have my next guest. Her name is Lynn, and she is a birth doula. So I think that's really cool, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have her on here. And I will let her introduce herself, and we're going to get right into it. Like, what is a birth doula, right? Maybe you guys don't know what it is. So go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, y'all. This is Lynn Ho. I am with the Monarch Birth Keeper, and I go by a birth keeper and also known as a birth doula.
Okay, so thank you for, saying that. So you want me to address you as the birth keeper?
Sure. Yeah.
Not the birth doula.
Yeah, okay. I'll share more about it.
Yeah, of course, this is your own journey. So, all right. Obviously, let's first major question. How did you even get into, like, that's such a niche. Like, I don't know how many people would be like, I want to grow up and I want to deliver kids, you know?
So I journeyed on with, through my own pregnancy and my hunger to learn about childbirth. And I must say that the pandemic was the biggest motivation for me. The source of work and just my passion with women's health and wellness, that was the biggest motivation.
Okay, so this was just like a newfound thing that you did. Like, were you already somewhat doing classes in the medical field? Were you like already like on the journey? Because it's like, how I met her, just some 411, is she also works at Zuma. Shout out to Zuma. And she was the bartender, and I just was so in love and with her light and her presence. So I was like, oh, there's something about her I got to get to know. So like, you've always been a bartender, right?
Yes, I've been in the restaurant industry for over 10 years. Took a lot of time to kind of come back to it. And I absolutely love it. It keeps me on my toes.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So I met you in that type of industry, and that's what you were. And then boom, were you already taking classes? Was that something, like you said? So did you get pregnant around the pandemic? And like, how did we even just like stumble upon this situation?
Yeah, so the journey actually began pretty young, actually, when I was 9 and going through my own trials and tribulations of becoming a woman. I had a lot of interest in learning about our body and the way that it works, our menstrual cycle. And so I had to do a lot of my own studies. And most of the studies that I've learned was through the school education, and that just wasn't enough for me.
Right.
Fast forward it to maybe around 21 when I decided to move to Hawaii. I connected a lot with embodied women there. And
it's a very spiritual place.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, they talk a lot about being pono, which is doing the right thing and
wait,
connecting.
Not porno, pono.
Pono, yes, P-O-N-O.
Because someone like me with a dirty mind would be like, wait, what? Okay, go
ahead. I mean, if that's a thing okay.
Okay, so pono.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
And is that a, what's the Hawaiian native culture? What's their Hawaiian native culture?
Native Hawaiians, indigenous?
Yeah, what is it called?
I'm confused on that.
Is that their language?
Hawaiian, yes.
Oh, Hawaiian, okay.
Native Hawaiian tongue.
Mm-hmm. So pono, okay.
Yeah, so it all began in there when I moved to Hawaii. I was there for about 5 years, and I attended to a lot of women's circle and like women's healing and doing a lot of shadow work.
Does that entail like meditation and breathing and yoga work? And like, does that also entail exploring like your divine feminine sexual energy as well?
Oh, definitely. Yes. So it definitely involved a lot of yoga work, breath work, and a lot of embodiment within the sexual energy and how to utilize that in a good way. So
fascinating, because I just did in 2000 and where are we? Just 24. So 2022, I did the divine feminine a sex paint series. Mm. So all I did was paint for 1 year, women having sex basically, but because I feel, and I'm happy that you're here and you're a mother, I feel often that women get ashamed, or women get told when they become mothers, they have to tone down their like sexual energy, or they have to tone down their feminine energy, right? Yeah. They have to like, and it's just like one of those things where society is like, you can't dress like this anymore because now you're a mother, or you can't be hot, or like, you know, it's like all these interesting things where constantly society, or let's just even look at the business world. They give us a dress code on how women should dress, right? We can't show our breasts too much, right? It's like constant, always shame of our bodies and our curves. We got to be careful of the pants we wear because God forbid, like HR and like a man, you know, and like, so it's constantly these things of trying to bring down our divine feminine sexual energy.
I agree, yeah. And then when it comes down to suppressing that sexual energy, things just kind of, you know, you exert it out in such different ways that might not benefit us or other people. And like you were saying, why water ourselves down, you know?
Okay, so you learn these things and then you come back and then, you know, obviously the pandemic happens. So like, were you taking classes though? Or were you certified? What are the certifications? Like how do you wake up one day and say, I want to be a birth doula. I want to be a birth keeper. Well, that's your name. So I'm going to give you that. So how does someone want to say like, I want to be a birth doula?
So definitely finding the passions for, I think it's a calling actually in your heart. If you have a calling in your heart to do something big within women's health, embodiment, and standing up for what is right, which is freedom, I highly encourage you to listen to that calling. And whether it's through sexual abuse, just your hunger for learning, that is, lean into it. If you want to become a doula, the best way to do that is to Google's your friend.
Okay.
Google's your friend. And, you know, there's a course that you actually take that is about a weekend long. And there's a requirement of maybe 20 hours. And it's a certification that you can actually branch out to a lot of different places.
So it's just a certificate. That's it.
A certificate.
Of 20 hours?
20 hours.
To deliver human beings?
Yeah. So you get a little 20 hours of childbirth education and then you do 10 hours of lactation.
So for 20 hours, I can start delivering babies?
I know.
That's a little bit but okay.
I mean, girl, childbirth can take up to a whole week, you know?
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. That's like insane. So I'm going to, real quick, so... Do you know the story on how your mother was born and how you were born?
Yeah, so I'm actually a twin and
no way.
Yeah, I'm 2 minutes younger. So my mom actually gave birth to us naturally, and kudos to her because I don't know how she did it, pushing two babies out with no medicine, no nothing. And
honey.
Yeah. Two babies.
Honey. Pushing a child out of your vagina is no joke.
Yeah, it's definitely something that is not for the faint of heart.
Okay, so she did that, and then all right, so did she tell you like when my friends say they don't have children, I'm not gonna lie, and they say to me, how was it? And I tell them that shit was the most gangsta of all gangster pains in my life. Yes, like, I don't try to paint a pretty picture. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I like, and it's funny because sometimes, like, I live in an area, Swampscott, Marblehead. It's a lot of stay-at-home mothers. Mm. And they're like, oh, being pregnant is so beautiful. And oh my God. And they do like fucking yogas for babies and like all this. And I'm like, what kind of world are you living in? But then again, I have to think about maybe their support system and maybe it really is beautiful for them, right? Because like for me, my pregnancy was so traumatic. Like my adoptive parents kicked me out. Like the father of my child was like, it's not mine. Like it was a very traumatic, turbulent pregnancy, right? So it's like, is that another reason why you wanted to become a birth doula? Because, like, I don't know, was yours so beautiful you wanted to share your beautiful journey? Or was it, like, a traumatic one where you wanted to make it right for other women?
Yeah, so I was really blessed, actually, to have a graceful birth and pregnancy. I didn't really experience much of the symptoms or anything like that. I must say that it had to do a lot with the work that I was doing within my own body, being sober for about 5 years before becoming pregnant.
So, oh, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I also say that to my friends. Like, a lot of my friends, too, they're like, oh, I want to have kids. I'm like, stop drinking. Mm. Like, the way y'all drink is insane. Like, I'm not – so let me clarify. My pregnancy was really easy as well, because I was in shape and I worked out a lot. So I didn't really have problems as far as like carrying her or feeling it. It was just the whole, like, I guess, emotional aspect of it, of like
the postpartum part.
No, no, I didn't even have postpartum. That wasn't even a thing for me. It was like the whole, like, you shouldn't have the baby. It was like the whole, like, don't have this child type of thing, that type of pressure. But actually being pregnant was kind of easy for me. I didn't even know I was pregnant until I was 6 months because I was only 19. I was training for soccer. So I didn't even know until that situation happened. But I tell my friends in saying that, though, like, a lot of my friends and a lot of women, they like, oh, I want to be pregnant and they want to have children. And I look at their lifestyles and how they live. Like, you're not eating right. You're drinking all the time. But when you say that to them, they're like, they feel some type of way. But it's like, and I'm glad that we're talking about drinking too and stuff, because or just even drugs in general. I always tell people, like, be careful, like, how children are made, because there's a lot of energy exchange there.
Absolutely.
And one of my friends, I love her to death, but she has addiction. The father or child had severe addiction. And I know I was, like, I was fucked up for saying it, but when she called me when she was pregnant, she was in her 40, I think she was 40, and I was like, get rid of it. Because I said, no matter what happens, I said, you're fighting genetics. There's so much addiction in both of your genetics that no matter how much love you give or how much prayer, I've seen it. You know what I mean? I've seen it firsthand. And I don't think people really understand when they're dating and they ask these questions. Do you have addiction in your family? Do you have mental health in your family?
Yeah, that's really important.
That's such a big – these are big questions to ask when you're dating. Like how, you know, because I'm telling you, like, change – exchange of energy. I'm glad that you talked about doing breath work. I'm talking about doing energy because I think you can understand. It's like people have no idea how I was seeing. I was a single mom and I was seeing my daughter do things that her father does, like the way she eats. And he wasn't even in her picture in her life like that.
Yeah.
So tell me what, like, how do you feel about what I just said, energy exchange, and how just things are passed down, DNA, and how people have to be so careful on even who they're procreating with.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, because I know that that's really vulnerable to share, especially when it comes down to substance abuse. And, energy exchange and sexual energy exchange is something that I definitely have considered a lot. And even before meeting my partner, I was celibate for almost a year.
Wow. And
yeah, having these conversations about how our lifestyles are and what our values and our belief systems might be and how our family grows up and the unit and our dynamics, those are important. Definitely, because having a baby in the mix of those conversations is tough.
I just feel like you did it in such a mature way that I don't even think in today's generation people are doing that. People are going to clubs and just hooking up with randoms, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's drunk at night, and before you know it, fucking drunk semen is going inside drunk vagina, and we're having an energy exchange of a drunk baby, you know? And I hate to say it like that, but then they wonder, like, oh, my baby father ain't shit. Well, look how the situation, how you met. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to see how, like, you were so – it was like you were preparing your whole life for that situation, and how you were just so – and I feel like – I mean, I was young. And my situation is different because, like, I was adopted, and I felt very lonely in United States. I felt like I didn't have no family. So when I met the father of my child, I was like, okay, he's my best friend. Like, okay. And physically he had everything that I wanted. He was tall. He was African. He was, you know, like, and I'm like, cause I didn't want a short Guatemalan baby. I was like, nah, like, we can't be passing down those energetics. I'm like, I need that tall shit, you know? So anyway, like, but I feel like today too, like, I have so many friends right now who are like in their mid 30s and 40s and they want to have kids, but they're just not having these type of karma. They're not picking the right partners. And I keep telling people, like, listen, you're a child. You better love the father of your child, because your child is going to share so much of this genetic of this person, absolutely, and the energy. And I just don't think they get it.
Mm. Yeah, and sometimes children come into our lives to ground us, and I do believe that because, you know, even with my pregnancy, it was not planned, and I was la-di-dying in the ethers, like, you know, I was really tapped into my spiritual work, and at this time of my life, at 29, God was just like, it's time to settle down, Lynn. Like, you gotta come back to this body. You gotta do something that's a lot more bigger than who you are as a person, but for the whole collective. So sometimes, you know, pregnancies aren't planned. And
I mean, think about what pregnancies are planned.
Yeah.
If that was the case, 99% of the human race wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm.
And look at you now. Like, you know, after having your daughter, it seems like you're getting yourself together as an entrepreneur, as a woman, and empowering others to do what their dreams and goals are.
Yeah, I can honestly say, like you said, grounding. I always say to people, like, yes, I had my daughter young. And it was unconventional. And yeah, we were on welfare. Yeah, we struggled. It was some gangster shit what we went through. But I also feel like my daughter raised me, you know, because she was always like, she wanted more. Mm-hmm. I need this. I need that. I need new shoes. I need new clothes. I need this. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to school and it's like, oh man, I got to keep working harder and harder. So in a sense, it was like, she always made me up my game, you know? And so I'm sure that, you know, that's what kids do because I heard this quote out here in this world saying that like, he said, I think I forgot who it was, but he said, I like being responsible for people because it gives me purpose. And think about when people say they don't want to have kids. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't have no responsibility, it's a very selfish kind of life living out here. Because that's the whole point of human beings is to procreate. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and it's to procreate. And if not having your children is in your timeline, that's okay too.
Yeah, of course, of course. Okay, so tell us, like, I've never met a, I'm going to call you your birth keeper. Mm-hmm. What is a day in the life of being a birth keeper? So, like, I'm coming to you. First of all, how do I hire you? What do I do? And, like, what are your services throughout my pregnancy? And, like, yeah, give us the rundown.
Yeah, so when you're in search of a doula, it's definitely something you want to consider with the type of person you're looking for, your needs and your partner's needs. Those are the different topics that I feel is important for you to know as a person of what it is that your needs are for your family and what your support might look like around you. So if you're looking to hire a doula, definitely know those needs and then find the person that you feel like will connect with you. Because not every doula will be for you. So it's definitely important.
Yeah, because that's a very intimate thing.
Yeah, you're pretty much ass open and legs open.
Yeah, this honey, you're about to go on my whole vagina. I need to make sure I'm okay with this situation.
Yeah, so it's very intimate. I highly encourage you to actually, if you're looking for someone that you're working with, look up matchdoula.net and, you know, they will list all the doulas that are in your neighborhood and feel them out. Trust your intuition and ask all the questions that you feel you need to know.
This is my question, though. Like, so for instance, and we talked about this briefly prior to the show, I was born in a ditch. My biological mother literally delivered me in a ditch, not in a hospital, and my aunt caught me, right? So having a birth doula, does that mean instead of going into the hospital and pushing in delivery, does that mean that I'm like squatting? Does that mean that I'm delivering my child in a pool? Like what is the difference between a birth doula and say I go into the hospital and the doctor's like, what, like are these different type of pregnancies, alternative things that you do? Is that what that is?
So yeah, I'm actually glad you brought that up because there are so many different avenues to giving birth. There are different ways such as home birth, there's birth centers, then there's hospital birth, and then you can also free birth, which doesn't involve any medical attention at all, and that's you and your partner, or maybe just you and a support person. So
would you be the support person as a birth doula?
Yes. Okay. I would be there to support. Personally, right now, I wouldn't feel comfortable to be at a free birth, but right now I currently work with at high risk mothers in a hospital setting. And for me to be there, I, you know, comfort you in different ways, such as like massage, physical touch, affirmations. I communicate with the medical team, and pretty much I'm your friend to communicate medical terms that you might not understand.
Wow. Wow. So like, yeah, because I remember when I was pregnant, and I remember my mother's friend, she was like, I want to be your like birth coach or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember she came in and another sidebar, my pelvic bone got broken. So I couldn't have epidural. Mm. So because they were scared that if I had epidural, I wouldn't feel the pain and it would be totally, it was shattered. It wasn't totally broken. Mm. So they thought that if I had epidural, it would just totally split in half, right? Mm. So I remember she came in and she was like, I'm here now. I was like, if you don't shut the fuck up. I was so angry because I was in so much pain. You know what I mean? So, like, what's that like to know when you're trying to help somebody and they're probably yelling at you and screaming at you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have been sworn at, yelled at, haven't been hit yet, but that's where advocating for myself is definitely important. But, you know, when you're in this process of childbirth, you are so open and so sensitive that you can feel everything that's actually happening in the room, within you, within other people. So finding the right support that you know can do their best to be accepting of the pain that you're going through and how you can cope, I say that not lightly. And as a support person, not taking things personal and being able to know that you're helping in a way that you're bringing in new life. And at the end of the childbirth, they will realize how much of a bitch they probably were, which is, it happens, but they will more than likely apologize and be more than grateful that you're there.
It's like that Snickers commercial, you're not yourself. Wait, and then they give you the Snickers? Like, sorry for the animal that I just was, because, like, obviously there was a human being coming out of my whole vagina, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's, like, funny because it's, like, once you come down and all that craziness. So then let me ask you this, like, now we're going to get into postpartum, right? Which is what did you feel about that whole thing about the woman who ended up like killing her whole three kids and like then she blamed it on postpartum and I know you're going to have, I feel like you're just such a more empathetic person than me, but I can just already tell you're such a like, ooh, la la la, I'm flower child. But to me, like, I come from a country where women are so strong. Women are working till the day of their pregnancy, right? Mm-hmm. Delivering in a ditch, boom, whatever, cut my umbilical cord, clean it up, wrap it up, and then working the next day, right? And there's like, I've never seen just such like poor me victimized behavior like I have in the United States. Mm. Like, there's really no such thing as postpartum in Guatemala. There's no such thing as that in, say, even Asia or in Africa. Like, women get this shit and then that's it. You gotta keep going.
Yeah.
And there's just so much of like this poor, like even mental health thing. Like, there's no like me feeling bad for myself, right? Mm. And it kind of upsets me because it's like, I don't know what the hell. It's like women have been given birth for the end of time. You don't think that women felt some type of way after they had children and all of a sudden this whole postpartum thing. And it's like, oh, it's just really aggravating for me.
It truly is. And it's not talked about much about postpartum because, you know, there's the fear of being labeled bipolar, depression, anxiety, and who wants to get labeled? But my question for you is, did you feel that you got the support that you needed, or were there any support when you were going through your first months of becoming a new mom?
So no, I actually didn't. So like, so my adopted mother, because my I was adopted, she couldn't have children. Mm. So I didn't even have support throughout my pregnancy, meaning I couldn't ask her, hey, what's it like to feel a child inside of me? What can you tell me to guide me? She didn't tell me about cocoa butter on my stomach. She didn't tell me, she couldn't tell me anything. I was just out here floating in the wind, trying to figure it out on my own. So, you know, the things. So, and even when after I had my child, like there was no discussion. It was like, okay, I had her. Now get into straight changing diapers, putting her to sleep, and that was it. And like, honestly though, I'm okay with that because like you figured it out. Like, I think sometimes like this whole like, although I do think, because we're gonna get into something serious, United States has the number one mortality rate mm-hmm. for first world country for deaths upon pregnant women. Because obviously, like, once women, I don't know, give birth, it's like they forget about the woman and they're like, oh, let's just focus on the child, right? Mm-hmm. After the woman, like you said, is exposed, she feels every element. But my thing is like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I just think that, I think women are just using this whole like postpartum excuse thing too much. Like, I don't know. It's just like, oh my God. And then I feel bad kind of for the husbands or the baby. It's like their excuse to be like poor me or bitchy. And it's like, get over yourself. Women have been doing this forever. They didn't act like this 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to postpartum, it's never really... It usually roots back to pre-pregnancy and genetics too. Mm. And I think that for me in my own postpartum experience, I definitely have recognized that, you know, just going through the mother wound, you know, the relationship between my mother and I and how to be mothered or mothering my daughter, I think that that was a lot of challenges I faced. And it comes down to being able to have that self-reflection. You know, sometimes with the postpartum period, it does become so severe that women are afraid to ask for help. And I think that a part of being a mother is asking for that help and being humble enough to receive the help.
Mm. Again, I know I'm a different type of person, so I don't expect everybody, but like, I don't know. Like, to me though, I'm just saying, like, the amount of just like, I mean, I even saw online too, they're gonna start marketing postpartum medication for women. And I just thought, oh my God, like another medication, like another thing, like another, there's just to me how I feel because I'm not from this country. And so I see what my people go through and how poor they are or just whatever. They just get up every day and get to it, right? Yeah. There's no poor me attitude. But here in United States, there's just such a poor, oh my God, I have anxiety. I can't go out. Like there's no such thing as anxiety in Guatemala. Like this is really an American thing.
Really resilient people.
Like there's just no such thing is like there's just too much of more like, oh my God, I'm going through something and like it's like I can't take it. So again, but maybe you, and I get it because you deal with women and their emotions and you're in a totally different, you see it, but like, I don't know, this is why you're a birth doula and I'm not, because I'd be like, bitch, get over it. Like,
no, sometimes I could use that for sure. But I, you know, coming from a first generation, my mom and my dad is actually full Vietnamese, and my mom gave birth to 5 kids, all natural. And the first 2 kids, she did everything all natural, and in the most poorest city in Vietnam.
So that's what I'm saying. She had to get to it and keep on moving.
She still had to get to it. She actually still had to work, and my dad had to work. He was fighting in the army. And not only that, my mom actually, you know, had to deal with coming from Vietnam to America via boat, like a little fisherman's boat. While holding a 4-month-old baby and a 4-year-old daughter. And this is where the resilience we talk about with being a person of color is that we just are designed so differently. And I think that is really motivating for a lot of people here in America, where they see women who are colored, earth colored, and feel intimidated maybe, but also inspired in a way that we just carry ourselves in a way that is unexplainable.
That's true, because that's another thing I always tell people. Like you said to me when we first met, you said that you could recognize my power, right? But that's only because I tell people, when I say this, sometimes people are like, what the hell? I'm like, it's not just mine. It's my descendants. It's my ancestors are with me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm Mayan Indian, and I don't know how to explain that to people, but I'm like, I'm not just walking with my light. I'm walking with literally like the warrior queens behind me and like the Mayan kings, and my people build temples. So when you know that about yourself, which I know that about myself, I know that this is what my people did. We built pyramids. So I have that power, right? Like you said. So it's like knowing yourself, but I just feel like, but how do you feel like about women? So like, have you ever dealt with a woman and she's just like crazy? She doesn't want to deal with the baby afterwards. She doesn't want to like deal, because I mean, I've seen some things again where some women, you read on the news and like they microwave their kid or they just do this psychotic shit, right? Yeah,
that's it's like another level of psychosis.
Yeah. So it's like, like, have you dealt with any women? Like, so when you're a birth doula, is it after you deliver the child and then that's it? Or are you still continuing this whole, like, child that you're going and doing checkups and seeing how, quote, they're postpartum? Is that part of your process still?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially working with a large institution where we are protected as birth doulas. We provide support before pregnancy, during pregnancy, during birth, and then the first week of postpartum. And I've actually seen mothers.
Oh, so you only get 1 week?
Well, we have like 6 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, depending on how much the support the mom needs. You know, sometimes just out of the goodness of my heart, I'll definitely just check in with them anyways.
Oh.
But we definitely are more present within the first week of postpartum. But I've definitely have worked with moms who, after have given birth, just disconnect.
Really? Mm-hmm. What's that like?
It's scary. I mean, it's scary.
Like,
for
meaning
me to
they
witness.
Have the child and they just don't even want anything to do with the child?
It's more or less being overwhelmed by the mundane of doing things repetitively, and then also the lack of sleep. And then their partners are probably, you know, not present because they have to provide, which I absolutely want to share this with you too.
Yeah, of course.
Massachusetts actually just recently, not recently, but 2018 passed the Paid Family Leave Act. So that's only a 4-year-old act that helps support moms and dads up to 1 year. So you would apply for this application to get paid. And if you look at your pay stubs from any job, you can actually see it on the tax takeout part where it says certain amount of dollars paid family leave.
Wow.
So claim that money if you're a brand new parent.
Wow. Or you're planning on that. Wow. Yeah. You know what? That's information that I didn't know. Obviously, I haven't had another child, but honey, if I was going to, I'd be like, pay me for that year. Mm-hmm. Right. But so what you're saying is that do they go to like the MassGov website and mm-hmm. say, okay, I'm going to have a child. And so the mother and the father both can get paid now and take a leave a year off.
Yeah. So that's actually amazing. Take up to 12 weeks. And then until
Justin, you hearing that? So when you have a child, Justin's like, I'm taking notes on all this.
I mean, it's amazing. Actually, now, you know, a lot of people are advocating for families to be supported. And especially during postpartum, it's hard. You're only getting 3 hours of sleep, 4 hours of sleep. Like, who functions like that as a human being? It's hard.
I always tell everybody when I had my daughter, I don't think I slept.
Girl, the sleep is something special after you have a child.
I don't know what it is. It's like, I used to have to hold her and go up and down flight of stairs. Mm-hmm. This is why I lost all that weight too. Plus I was breastfeeding. I was blessed in a situation though where I did have her at 19. And then my adoptive parents had kicked me out. And then I was in housing. And then I knew I was going in to go to college. So I got a scholarship too to play soccer. So I was able to take, I had her in January all the way to that August, September, before school started. I was home for 8 months. Mm. And I tell people all the time, like, obviously I'm not an advocate for welfare, but I don't know where I would be if I didn't have welfare at that time helping me. Mm-hmm. Because like, I was able to stay home. I was able to like, you know, and just bond with my daughter for those whole like almost a year, mm-hmm. right, before I had to put her in daycare.
Yeah.
So like that is a very important thing too, because I feel like, I mean, it's better now in this country, but even in like say Guatemala or other parts, like, oh, you going back on the fields or you going to work, your kids coming to work with you too.
One or 2 days after birth, you know?
Yeah.
So we're really blessed. And going on welfare, having support with EBT or WIC, SNAP, all that, it doesn't make you any less of a person.
No, absolutely not especially
to get back on your feet.
Especially single mothers. Like, again, like, I didn't have the luxury of having the father of my child be in my life or having a rich, you know, whatever, family or anything like that. So it was like, yeah, welfare saved me and my daughter's life. But at the same time, I do agree, too, that, like, we have to put some type of time limit on it. And also a reward system. I know for me, I did some things that I shouldn't have done by any means necessary, some shady things, because if I got a regular job, they're going to take away my benefits. So I had to do what I had to do under the table, you know what I mean, to, like, get by. And it's like the system needs to be built better and reward. So if a single mother is going to school or taking classes or whatever, then she should still continue to get her benefits or whatever. You know, there should be it needs to be a better system because a lot of people are like, well, why go to work? I'm going to lose my stuff. And then I have to, it's just like, it doesn't make sense sometimes.
Yeah. I agree with you on that.
So in speaking of system and welfare and things like that, in my past, because I'm from, you know, the North Shore area, Marblehead, Swampscott, having a birth doula was always very an expensive thing. Now, is this covered by, say, MassHealth? Are you covered by insurance now where, say, I don't know, I don't make that much. And say I'm a young mom, I'm only 16, or say I'm whatever, a single mom on welfare. Am I able still to get your service?
Yeah, so institutions such as Boston Medical Center, Mass General Brigham, and Cambridge Health Alliance actually offers these services to high-risk mothers. And you can actually apply or get your doctor to refer you to these services. And that would actually be covered under insurance. But for the most part, with private doulas, they do range from $800 to about $3,000.
No way. So wait, 800 to 3,000 private doula, meaning like per hour or for the day? Like what is the 800 to 3,000?
So it would be like an annual kind of thing where it starts from the start of pregnancy to the first to second week of postpartum. So that's about 12 months, 1 year. $3,000?
That's it? Oh, no, honey.
Yeah.
Oh, you got into birth and vaginas and you only getting paid $800 to $3,000.
Yeah, girl. Oh, no. That's why I'm bartending, keeping myself on my toes a little bit and supporting myself in that way. But luckily, MassHealth actually just passed a law where they actually will be covering this past December. So they're kind of in the works with that. And we're trying to get our money and advocate for our pay and our time and our energy, because we're not just, you know, there. We're helping you deliver a new human being.
Yeah.
And we're getting paid maybe a minimum wage, less than that.
Yeah. I thought when you were saying 800 to 3,000, I was thinking like you getting this an hour. Because you are literally like helping deliver a human being, a child. To me, like, if a doctor's getting paid this much, why aren't you? That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow. So then let me ask you this, business side. What are you doing now? Are you going to start charging for other services?
Yeah, so that's where I refer myself as a birth keeper.
Right.
Doula services, you know, we focus a lot on the physical comforts, the emotional comforts, and providing education on childbirth and postpartum. But for me as a birth keeper, I'm your coach. I work with self-development. I work with health and wellness. And I just want you to be a better person for not only yourself, but for your partner and for your baby.
Aww.
So as a birth keeper, I want you to create a legacy that you will be proud of and that you will grow
so
as a person.
So if we go onto your website, which is what?
So my website is themonarchbirthkeeper.com.
What does monarch mean? Butterfly, right?
Yes,
okay, butterfly. Transformation. Okay, so themonarchbirthkeeper.com. Okay, and in that service, if I'm private, right? And I go to hire you. Not only are you going to help me deliver my child, but you're offering the services of like meditation work, what other services besides, like you said, like life coach, better partner, like tell me, explain to me, what does that entail?
Yeah, so there will be different packages that are available that, you know, you might be looking for, but the types of services that I will provide will be prenatal and just yoga practices, sound healing, which works with, you know, realigning and retuning and clearing out your auric field.
Yeah, I did sound healing, by the way, for the first time this summer. I did a yoga retreat in the Cape with my coffee. So it was really cool. The bowls and the sound and just
gongs.
Flutes. Yeah.
It's really powerful. And, you know, as a mother or a new parent, it is really important to protect yourself spiritually and physically. And these tools are great.
Let's dig a little deep into that. Like, so what do you think spiritually, like, why do you think happens? Like, so many men don't really understand what women go through, right? So what do you think spiritually in your professional experience now as a birth doula and as a mother and as a woman, spiritually, like, what do you think a woman will goes through being pregnant? Like, what is, how can you explain that to us? So let's just, especially for the men out here listening, so maybe they have a better understanding. Because forget the physical. It's like, I always tell people that too. Like, this is just my physical shell. Remember, there's a whole spirit and energy inside of me. So let's like dig into that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about spirituality in general. You know, whether you believe in a higher being or the elements of the earth, or even your animals, they could be your God, your plants, they could be your higher being. So finding what that true meaning is and that's going to give you faith and hope, I think that will help you along the way to your journey as a human being. But to answer your question, how can men support us women through our journey as a mother? Men, I think that, let's see, holding that sacred space, that safe container, love, unconditional love, and doing your own self inner work is important, to not take things personal when the woman is going through her own journey.
Yeah, because do you think that men can feel very left out? Because, right, we're the ones carrying the child, right? We're the ones physically going to go through the pain. We're the ones who's going to first breastfeed, right? So do you think that, because I hear this, I have a lot of guy friends, and I hear this where, oh, and this is the second question, another question I was going to add to this. They always say they regret seeing the birth, because they say, and fellas, this is your choice or not, because back in the day, men didn't really watch women, kids being delivered. This is like a new thing, like in the past maybe 50 years, right? Because that shit is traumatic. You see your whole wife's vagina or your girlfriend's shit ripped open. You're like, do I ever want to hit that shit again? Like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like, that's some gangster shit. You're just like, whoa. You see a whole, like, oh my God. And from my guy friends, they've been like, yo, I wasn't like... They even have said, and it's crazy, they've said that, no, my wife is my wife. And after I saw my child delivered, like, I didn't even really want to have sex with her like that, right? And, like, they just didn't want their wife to do, like, the nasty, greasy, like, porn sex anymore. They wanted to hire, like, their own little mistress or their own side piece, because it was, like, seeing that as a man. And it's like, what do you think? Like, for men, like, do you even think that men, do you think men should be present when?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can't speak for you men out there, but as a woman who loves her support from my husband and just the masculine that he is, I want him to witness what I go through, because as a woman being pregnant and giving birth, nothing will ever destroy me ever again. The pain that I've felt will never equate to that ever. But as to have my partner there and present, yes, that means a lot to me. And I think that you might be even empowered by her and the way that her body changes. And yes, you might see a whole dang baby's head come out of her vagina. But luckily, that muscle, that vagina is a muscle. And if,
it's like an elastic.
As yeah. long as she does the work, the kilos, you know, that thing will go right back to normal, like a virgin.
And that's another thing. Oh my God, I'm glad you brought that up. Do you teach women how to like tighten up their vagina? Like, do you teach women about like, right now, wait, we should be.
Sure.
I'm squeezing my vagina.
If that's your cup of tea and you want to learn, yes, I do have the tools for it, but I don't have the answers to everything. But I can share, you know, with what my practices are. And if I don't have it, you know, there are so many different resources. And I know a lot of women who practice the Kegels and the yoni eggs, and you know, just so many different things.
Let's talk about that. So for women that don't know, or men that don't know, what are Kegels and what are yoni eggs?
I mean, what do you know about that?
I mean, I know Kegels is obviously, like we talked about, our muscle, our vagina. So you should, at least especially after having a child, you should always be like, anytime you're driving or anytime you can, just sitting there and you're just squeezing the muscle. So it makes you a better sexual partner too as well, ladies. So when a man is, you know, entering, you're having sex with him and you can know how to squeeze it and let go, it's just going to help you better sexually as well. Yeah. So it's just having control of understanding your muscles, your body inside and out. I don't really know much about yoni eggs because I feel weird. Like, and I feel weird about doing any of that crazy weird stuff like douching or putting things in me. I don't even have sex toys, to be honest with you, and no offense to anybody, but I just feel weird about batteries around my vagina or plastic things or like glass. I'm like, nah, if it's not the real thing, I'm like, I'm cool on that.
I love my sex toys.
Really? Yeah, that's like, okay, so yeah. I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, I don't know, it's just not really my vibe. But so what is a yoni egg?
So a yoni egg is actually made out of precious gemstones. They could vary from different rocks that have been polished or even glass. But mostly I would actually encourage you to work with precious gemstones. And like you were saying, you don't like batteries.
Yeah, wait, time out. Y'all hear that? My vagina got precious gemstones. I can't take this conversation right now. Honey, what are you doing? Oh, I just got a precious gemstone in my vagina. Wait, and I see you're wearing a precious gemstone on your neck, which is a quartz, right?
Yes, rose quartz.
What's quartz for healing? So like if your vagina needs healing, you put a rose
quartz. You put a rose quartz up in that vagina, girl. And, you know, even as women, like we can work on ourselves and tighten our vaginas. But men, y'all need to learn how to love your way in a new way that she's going to receive, you know? Like you can't. I personally would say that I don't have sex the same way that I would prior to baby.
And what does that mean? That's fascinating.
Yeah, there's just a different.
You have like more reserved sex?
Oh, no, we would.
She said, no.
I still love my sex, but, you know, a different way of connecting. There's just our bodies more open, more sensitive, and learning with each other of what might work. And it might take a little bit more time to ease into sex after birth.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. After I had my daughter, and obviously the father of my child was young, and he was playing basketball in college. So when he'd come down and visit, and like, so I'm breastfeeding her, and then, you know, I had stitches in my, and then like he was, I'm like, bro, you trying to suck on my nipples and you trying to have sex with me. Like, I'm stop it. Get away from me.
It's different.
It was like, I can't do it. And it was just like, and he felt some type of way. He felt like I was turning him down. Right. And again, though, he was very immature because he was only 19. Right. So we're younger. We're not like adults having these conversations. Right. Because obviously he didn't know what, he wasn't in the delivery room, but it was like, again, so guys, I'm just saying this, don't feel that rejection and don't watch your egos, because if your lady, whether she's your wife or the mother of your child, and she rejects you after birth, it's not that. It's like you have to understand her body is healing. And like if she's breastfeeding, like, you know, and you can also feel some type of way like, oh, she's showing the baby more attention. I hear that a lot too with men, my guy friends, because I have a lot of guy friends. I'm like, and it's like, yeah.
Guys, jump in there.
Yeah.
Take her. Take the baby.
Right.
You know, give her some space so that she can come back to herself. And so that way she can pleasure you too.
Absolutely. Okay, good. So is there anything else that you want to like talk to us about?
I don't know.
Anything.
I feel like we were on a really good topic.
Okay, good. Now, how do you like the coffee?
It's delicious. I mean, there's just vanilla notes and cinnamon, and I like my coffee dark.
Okay, good.
Just like my husband dark, you know?
Okay, so yeah, real quick, like, tell us that love story. I always love to hear people's love stories.
I mean, we met by accident, I think. So Greg is my husband, and we met while working at a restaurant, and I was actually on my way out of the restaurant at that time, and he had just started. So I was on a journey to Miami for a whole month and then to Minnesota, and I was doing this like spiritual trip out there, and we had met, and I was just like, hey, I'm sorry, but I'm about to leave. Like, I know we just met. We haven't had sex for a whole month. Like, we're just getting to know each other for this phase. And it was really special to have that, that period where there was no physical exchange and we were able to talk and learn about each other. I went away for my journey for 2 months. I came back and I decided, hey, this is the guy that I want to build with. And
wow, so you knew.
We knew.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, we found out we were pregnant soon after, and then pandemic hit and we moved in with each other, and then that was the real deal.
Wow. So, well, congratulations. So cool. How old's your daughter?
My daughter's 3.
Okay.
At 3, I like to call her a teenager, though.
All right.
And your girl is?
She's 24, don't.
24.
Just reminds me of how old I am. All right. Anyway, well, thank you so much for coming. And what can people, again, like, where can we find you? And tell us your website and what's your Instagram. And, before we leave, that's another thing. How do you market the situation? Because it's like you can't market, like, babies coming out of women's vaginas. So, like, how are you marketing this situation?
Yeah, so...
Because marketing is a big deal for people. So, I mean, obviously, this show helps, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, how are you marketing being a birth doula? And do you see this being your lifelong commitment? Like, this is your career?
So, right now, I definitely see that this is a career path that I am passionate about. And I'm working actually towards a nurse certification to become a midwife.
Mm.
So maybe soon enough, I will actually be catching your baby.
Time out. Whoa. We didn't even touch on that. What is the difference between a birth doula and a midwife?
So the difference between a birth doula and a midwife is that birth doulas, we provide non-medical care and mostly on the physical and emotional support and the educational part. A certified nurse midwife is a certification where you would actually go through the education of a nurse, and then you would branch out and do a certification for midwife. But there's another traditional route where it's a certified professional midwife where, you know, back in the day with our ancestors, you know, that's where the traditional midwives were.
Yeah, exactly. That's how a lot of... What does a midwife do? Like, just really, instead of the doctor coming in, the midwife comes in and delivers and puts the hands all up in the vagina and pulls the baby out, cuts the umbilical cord?
Yeah, so there's a midwife, and then there's the obstetric care. Obstetric care would be more if, you know, you need the data, you want to be given the facts of what the health benefits are. You know, maybe an obstetric care would be better for you, but if you're more in tuned with yourself and want that care from a midwife where she can see you, be more empathetic, give you more holistic care, then you might want to lean more towards a midwife.
So a midwife would be the one if you want to say, hey, I want to deliver my child at home, like in a birth pool or standing up or squatting, like a midwife would be, I mean, whatever. Anyway, that person would be more, better than, say, a birth doula.
Yeah. A birth doula will also be present, but then if you're planning to do a home birth, then you more than likely will be working with a CPM, which is a certified professional midwife.
Wow.
And a certified nurse midwife would be more in a hospital setting, a clinic setting, a birth center.
But you could do both, right?
You can definitely do both. But I think on the business end and growth-wise, I definitely see myself more as a CNM.
Okay. And what about insurance? So, like, that must be some shit you got to carry.
Yeah, definitely. Insurance to cover our asses, for sure.
So you have to buy your own insurance. Mm-hmm. Ooh, so not only, no offense, because let me tell you something. I charge $2,000 per painting. So, So to hear that you're delivering human beings and you're only getting paid $800 to like $3,000 throughout the whole course, if you become a midwife certified, now what is the pay there?
So if you become a certified nurse midwife, I believe the pay could be from $35 to maybe $50 an hour.
Oh, okay. So now this is an hourly thing.
An hourly thing. And then you're also getting benefits from institutions. And you're also getting a coverage that is protecting you under that big institution such as a hospital.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely. So you can actually find all of my information on themonarchbirthkeeper.com, and same as my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, The Monarch Birth Keeper. And if you're interested in any of the resources, I did make a section there, and you can find all the information such as the Paid Family Leave Act and any support resource that you might need.
So. And how available or accessible are you if people reach out to you on social media? Is that okay for you? Or are you like, no, reach out to me on email only? How is it easy?
Yeah, so definitely accessible to all of the platforms, but I'm more engaged in the Facebook and Instagram, definitely email. And my services will be available in the summer of 2024, so be on the lookout for that.
Okay, well, thank you so much.